Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
We're doing very well in healthcare. We'll see what happens.
Here's John Williams.
Yeah, here I am, 207. We're in the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase.
Lord have mercy.
Studio on Michigan Avenue, and the sun keeps pounding through the clouds. It's a lovely day downtown Chicago. And in our studio is the author of An American Sickness, Elizabeth Rosenthal. She is the, is it editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News? Is that right? Longtime reporter for the New York Times, reported from Beijing for 6 years, and has been a non-practicing physician almost all of your career. Is that right?
Yeah, I worked in an emergency room for about 4 years before I say converting to journalism.
And it's funny because I've talked to a few authors or journalists who have their MDs.
Yeah.
And their sort of MO is that I can actually do more good for people. I can help or heal more people if I'm a diligent reporter than even if I'm a, you know, sort of circumspect physician.
Well, that was my intention from the beginning. I mean, I worked in an emergency room, and I ironically left journalism to write about the Clinton health reform at the New York Times in the 90s, because the problems I was seeing in the ER, I could try and solve patient by patient, but the problems were systemic. And in a way, that has led after 20 years to this book, because the problems now are so much greater even than they were then. And of course, you know, here we are again back at the table of health reform.
Do you think that we are better, at least for Obamacare, than we were without it?
Yes. I think, you know, nothing is perfect. And I think often in our health system, the looking for the perfect is the enemy of something pretty good. Obamacare did some really important things. It gave insurance to people with pre-existing conditions that was affordable. I mean, that was huge. There are 20 million more people who have insurance through Medicaid expansion and other parts of Obamacare. You know, there were plenty of things it didn't do very well. Some people experienced very high premium hikes. We still have 30 million people uninsured, which from the rest of the world looks pretty outrageous.
Even today, 30 million people are not insured?
Yep.
Are they then 30 million taxpayers or 30 million people?
30 million people.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, the idea was that if you're not insured, then you at least have to pay a penalty, right?
Yeah. Well, the idea, and I think this was a fundamental game change for a country that was behind Obamacare, is that it's a government's job to try and provide affordable, decent health care to its people. That's a government obligation. And I think even if you repeal Obamacare, that sense of obligation is still there. And but I think that's what we're seeing at the town hall meetings, people rising up and saying, wait, this isn't working for me, and you can't just take it away.
But is that revolutionary? It's a government obligation to provide reasonable health care? That's not in the Constitution, you know. That's not Thomas Jefferson didn't say that either.
It's revolutionary in the U.S. It's not revolutionary in most of the world.
But still, I mean, maybe that's, but we are in the U.S.
Right.
I wonder if that's at least a... We've obviously moved past that point, but
right.
I appreciate the sort of fundamental divide people would have about that issue. Maybe it's not the government's job to make sure everybody gets affordable health care, but we're going to go that direction, right?
Well, I think we're going to go that direction, and I think the problem with saying it's not the government's job is unless you're willing to not take care of people when they're sick, we all do end up paying, like it or not.
In the ERs, et cetera.
Yeah, in the ERs, in the cost of uncompensated care that happens at clinics that city health departments take care of.
Right.
It kind of falls back on our laps whether we like it or not.
Whether we like it or not. And then do you think that then, maybe this is the same question asked a different way, but some people also took exception to the notion that the government would mandate that you have health coverage or they would fine you if you did not. I guess, again, we've moved past that point. That's really the only way something like this works, right?
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of these things, we have this kind of reaction in the U.S., I don't want the government telling me what to do. But, you know, with smoking bans, with seatbelt laws, some things are the public good, and there's a lot of resistance, and then once it's there, we tend to accept it. Now, you know, saying that the government requires you to have health insurance doesn't necessarily tell you what kind of health insurance. I think you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as you have to have health insurance so that the burden doesn't fall on society as a whole. So whether you like it or not, it's kind of like vaccines. You know, we want kids to get vaccinated because it's good for everyone.
I wonder if the media has done a good job reporting on this, because if you listen to talk shows or read the newspaper, it seems like you hear these heart-wrenching stories of people whose premiums and deductibles make insurance coverage really a non-issue for them. They can't afford it, and as they try to, they still never actually get to the threshold where they use
it.
And that we blame on the Affordable Care Act. So that it's a disaster. It's just ruinous. We don't take calls from people going, thank God for Obamacare because now I have coverage. I don't know where that silent majority is, but we don't hear about that a lot.
Well, I think we're seeing them rise up at the town halls, right? When suddenly there's this prospect of their insurance may be taken away. They're like, whoa, you can't do that. You know, this helped me get the drug I need, or it saved my kid. I think the narrative that these skyrocketing premiums are because of Obamacare is a bit of a false narrative. I think those of us who are lucky enough to have commercial insurance are also experiencing skyrocketing premiums, skyrocketing copays, and deductibles. And I think that's a real problem that Obamacare didn't solve. And I think, you know, the issue is I really hate this notion that people don't want insurance. I think people want insurance. They just can't afford it often the way our insurance system is currently structured and with the prices we pay in healthcare, which are just way too high.
Yeah, that's what I want to get to. But do you think that the premiums and the deductibles, et cetera, people would be having those issues if Obamacare hadn't happened? Is that just a function of the marketplace and insurance in this country, or is it a function of the Obamacare program?
No, I think it's a function of the way we price and perform healthcare in this country. I think my book would have been true whether Obamacare was there or not, and it continues to be true even if there's some GOP replacement. It's a fundamental flaw in the way we do healthcare.
You talk about that a lot in the book. You have very specific instances from the patient's perspective where suddenly something that in Canada or Mexico or Europe is so much less expensive is so insanely expensive here. And I found myself at times getting not so mad at the government or the insurance companies as I am either the providers or big pharma.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, everyone wants a bad guy. So everyone wants to be able to say,
you're right.
Oh, it's pharma, it's the hospital, it's, you know, it's this doctor. The truth is it's the whole system, and it's the system that has evolved to accept these astronomical prices. And when people say, why are my premiums, why are my deductibles going up? The reason is because fundamentally, just the prices are too high. And if, guess what, your insurers, we like to say, oh, they're on your side. They're not on anyone's side. You know, your car insurer you don't think of as on your side, or your home insurer. They're pass-throughs. You know, they take in money from premiums and they pay it out in claims. And so if the prices are really high and your insurance tries to pay out, they're not going to eat those extra costs. They're going to pass them on to you. So part of the way we've gotten here is when people see these high prices that their insurance pays, they think, phew, I didn't have to pay that. My copay isn't so much. But guess what? You are paying. You'll pay next year with higher deductibles and higher premiums.
So what should happen? What's your prescription? Your book is kind of in two parts.
Yeah.
First, it's the malady, then it's the cure or some prescriptions for it. First, make sure I understand what the most critical parts are of the problem.
The central problem is high prices.
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty simple. And the secondary problem is if we're trusting the market to control those in healthcare, it won't, because it's not like any other market. I mean, we don't know prices ahead of time. We can't shop around. We get the bill afterwards. Somebody else is paying most of it if we're lucky.
Or,
anyway,
as you point out more than once, the price of X here is different than the price of X there.
Right. There is no price. What's the price for a vitamin D blood test? In the book, you can see it varies between $7 and $800 within a few miles. So How can you shop that way? Would you ever buy, you know, bread if that was the case? You wouldn't.
Or a Honda or something like that. It would be like if you went to Texas and Hondas were three times more expensive.
Right.
And you do sort of see that disparity, right? It makes no sense.
Oh, you see more than that. And that makes it impossible. You know, we're all being told, oh, be a good consumer. Well, without more price transparency and without more information, that's impossible. Someone said to me, she went to her local hospital because she was pregnant and didn't have insurance for that. And they said, oh, it'll be somewhere between $5,000 and $45,000. And she was like, you know, she's pregnant. She can't say, oh, well, then I'm not going to have my baby. You know, she just had to wait and see. And I said to her, so it's kind of like going to a restaurant with no prices on the menu. And she said, yeah, but at this restaurant, somebody else is always choosing what you get. And they're always choosing the most expensive thing on the menu.
Okay. So what's the first? No, this all works. By the way, in our studio is Elizabeth Rosenthal. Her book is An American Sickness. She's speaking this evening at the Co-op Bookstore over by the University of Chicago, and she will be there at 6 o'clock this evening. More about that appearance in a minute. Okay, so that's the problem. Now, you actually do have some specific ideas about what we need to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want you to know, I want you to tell us what you think about what the current administration and Congress are thinking about. Are
sure.
we on the right step? In a minute, on WGN, I'm John Williams. In our studio, Elizabeth Rosenthal, the author of An American Sickness. That's her latest book. She is the editor-in-chief of the Kaiser Health Network.
News.
Kaiser Health News. And she's going to be appearing at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore in Hyde Park over by U of C at 6 o'clock tonight. Okay. So you detailed before the break some of the problems.
Right.
What's the solution?
Well, and that's why the subtitle of the book is How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Because I think we can start to do things. So, you know, there are very practical tips that people can use to bring down the cost of health care for themselves. And I think that's the first step. You know, we have to ask for transparency and hold the medical world more accountable. How I do that, and this is why I know these things work, because researching this book has changed the way I interact with the system. So, for example, you go to a doctor's office and the doctor says, why don't we just get these blood tests? You know, your antenna should go up, right? Okay, fine. Your doctor's computer is most likely now programmed to send your blood to his hospital lab. And that's going to be really expensive. Hospital labs will cost hundreds of dollars what outside labs may charge $10 for. So I say to my doctor, okay, fine, but can you send this to Quest or LabCorp? Because they're in my network and they're cheaper. So you can ask that. Your doctor may have to take a little extra step and write out a requisition.
He might make a face. He might not like that.
No, but I talk to a lot of doctors groups too, and I think, you know, they will have to change the way they partner with their patients and you know what? Doctors don't like it that their patients are being ripped off. If you see in the book, some of the best sources I have are doctors who write to me and say, one guy, Dr. Jeffrey Crespin in New York, he said he was doing colonoscopies and he was sending the biopsies off to one of the hospitals in New York. And he said suddenly his patients were calling saying, doc, did you know they're charging me $1,000 and they're out of network? So he called me. He said, I'm pissed that my patients are being ripped off. So he found another lab. Now, physicians can do that. I know they didn't go to medical school to negotiate, but I think they don't feel good about these prices either.
But aren't there instances where they are sending the biopsy or the blood test to an agency that they themselves own or have some financial interest in?
Well, and that's why I think we should all be doing a little bit of advanced homework before we choose a doctor or choose a hospital. And one of the things I'd like to know from a doctor's practice is, A, do you own labs? Do you own the x-ray equipment? B, do you charge concierge fees? I hear from all of these patients.
And those are great.
This is crazy, you know, where you go to a doctor and you're in the practice and then suddenly they say, oh, you know, you have to write us a check for $1,000. And when the patients say, what for? They say, oh, it's so we answer your, because we answer your calls promptly, we'll see you in the hospital. And I'm like, wait, this is what doctors do. This is not, you know, they shouldn't be doing this for tips.
Okay, so I had some skin cancer taken off of my leg recently,
yeah.
And I went to a relatively new medical facility. It was awesome. Not only did they have valet parking, they had people walking around the front lobby area like young people that work at an Apple store. They all had tablets, and they immediately knew who I was and where I should be and sent me on my way. And when I got up there, it was kind of a large suite area with coffee machines and water stations and comfortable chairs. And I thought it was just the most organized, pleasant experience I ever had. And I was there for cancer surgery. It was just positively lovely. And I felt good about that. Your thoughts.
You shouldn't. you shouldn't feel so good about it. That was probably the most expensive. How much did it cost?
$1 zillion.
Right,
I I don't know.
Right, because you didn't pay it. Now, and this is...
I'll get a bill.
You'll get the bill. And this is why I tell everyone to look at their explanation of benefit statements and push back. There's one man in the book, Dr. Jeffrey Kivy, who had an infusion of some medicine for his arthritis at one hospital for $19,000 every month. Okay, that sounds like a lot of money. But then his rheumatologist moved uptown 20 blocks in New York to another hospital, and suddenly those same infusions were over $100,000. This is, and Dr. Kivy said to me, you know, I thought it might be a little more expensive. You know, the infusion rooms were really nice, and there was free Wi-Fi and cookies and water. But, you know, we are paying for this stuff, right? We are paying for it. And he, because he's like me, he's kind of a wonk and understands that the connection, went after the hospital, it was NYU Medical Center, and said, $100,000, that's crazy. And they said, you know, well, nobody pays it, your insurance will cover it. He had great insurance. And he said, that's not the point. Because he understood that if his insurer is covering $100,000 infusions, then all of our premiums are going up next year and all of our deductibles are going up.
I'm asking you, what are some of the solution sides? And so you said, well, we need more transparency, and it happens if patients ask for it. So I want to know, are you in network and are you doing the lab work here or outside the lab or the hospital? What else? What else should we do to push back?
You can say, if I need an X-ray, send me to a place that does it for $500 rather than $5,000. And your doctor's first answer may be, gee, I don't know that. But you know what? That is what doctors will have to learn, because I want my doctor to be the kind of person who's in my corner who will say to the $5,000 center, I'm not going to refer my patients to you if you're charging that much.
And it might take longer. We're going to have to find this place. We're going to send them off, and you won't be enough, be longer.
And it may be a hassle. I mean, I went outside of a hospital for an MRI for one of my kids. It saved a ton of money, but it meant that crazily in this world of online connectivity, I had to pick up the scan and walk it to the doctor's office. I'm like, can't you send that? And they're like, no, you know, our electronic records don't interact with theirs. That should change, but it will change if more of us make the effort to go outside of the system to save ourselves some money and our whole medical system to push back against these prices. They exist because we've allowed them to skyrocket this way.
The new Congress was unable to replace Obamacare. How did you score that? Is it good that they were not successful, or were you rooting for them to make some changes?
Well, I guess my bottom line is just like President Obama's, that if they have a way to do it better and cheaper and cover more people, like, hallelujah, go for it. But I would say we haven't seen that way. And healthcare is like a complicated Rubik's Cube. You know, you can't just say, oh, we're going to, you know, do high risk pools and then everything else will work itself out. So I haven't seen anything from the GOP side that is a real solution in a more global way. Yeah. And we haven't faced prices directly in any of these things. We haven't said to Medicare, you can negotiate drug prices, as every other developed country does. We haven't said to government agencies like PCORI, take into account how much things cost. We don't have an agency like NICE in England, which says, what should this new medicine cost? What's it worth? We don't do that in this country, and we're all paying for not doing it.
You hear often, we need to be able to purchase health care across state lines.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything, and would that make a difference if we change the law regarding that?
No, I mean, this has been tried before, and you can, if you think like an economist, you can see why it probably wouldn't work, because the states that have the lowest requirements for insurance will develop these bare-bones plans, and then Yeah, people will be able to buy inadequate insurance. I mean, the person I referred to who had to pay for her pregnancy out of pocket, she had insurance, but this was before Obamacare. And insurance in those days didn't necessarily cover maternity care. So do you want to worry about when you're buying a policy, in-network, out-of-network? Does it cover maternity care? Does it cover skin cancer care? I mean, this business of people should shop every year for insurance, this is an incredible burden to put on people. You just want to know that it covers kind of the things that medically people need, I think.
Elizabeth Rosenthal's book is In American Sickness. I left my copy on my nightstand. All of my notes and cursives and things are scribbled in there. The subtitle of the book is...
How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back.
She's going to be at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore in Hyde Park at the U of C tonight at 6 o'clock. Run for Congress, will you? Run for president. Run for health czar. I have confidence in you, Elizabeth. I want you to be in charge.
Well, I'm hoping the book will seed those people who are in charge now, because there is a lot we can do both individually and from a policy perspective. And a lot of it is not from Washington, where we may not get a lot of action, but at the state level. So there are lots of ideas in the book, and I hope people run with them. And maybe someday it will be me.
Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank you.